The race is on in the North Atlantic. The NTSB issues urgent recommendations involving 777s, and the ISS survives a threat from orbital debris. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, March 13, 2009. 17 people remain missing following yesterday morning's crash of a Sikorsky S-92 in the North Atlantic. One survivor was recovered and has been transported to a hospital in St. John's, Newfoundland. Rick Burt is the general manager of Cougar Helicopters, the operator, and tells Bloomberg the pilot reported engine problems en route to two offshore oil rigs. He says the pilot had turned back towards St. John's when the aircraft ditched about 31 miles off the coast. The aircraft has since sunk. All souls on board were wearing survival suits, which experts say should allow them to survive in the frigid waters for about 30 hours. Each suit also has a personal locator beacon. As search crews use a variety of aircraft in their race against time, check back for updates at aero-news.net. Following two uncommanded engine thrust rollback events on Boeing 777s powered by Rolls-Royce engines, the National Transportation Safety Board has issued a pair of urgent safety recommendations to the FAA and EASA, calling for the redesign of a Rolls-Royce engine component, said to be already in development, and the prompt installation of that redesigned part once it's approved. Specifically, the NTSB wants the FAA to require a redesign of the engine fuel oil heat exchanger to ensure that ice accumulation on the face of the exchanger will not restrict fuel flow to the extent that the ability to achieve commanded thrust is reduced. Once the new part is ready, the board wants operators required to retrofit it at the next scheduled maintenance or within 6 months, whichever comes first. NTSB Acting Chairman Mark Rosanker acknowledged, quote, "We are encouraged to see that Rolls-Royce is already working on a redesign, and we are confident that with the FAA and EASA overseeing the process, this flight safety issue, even one as complex as this, will be successfully and expeditiously resolved," unquote. NASA reports the International Space Station has survived a close encounter with space debris. The crew was given the all-clear at 12:45 p.m. Eastern Time yesterday and left the Soyuz capsule where they'd taken shelter as a precaution. It's not yet known how close the debris came to hitting the station. At least one Russian Soyuz capsule remains attached to the station at all times to serve as a lifeboat in the event that the crew has to evacuate. A second capsule will be added when the station reaches its maximum normal crew complement of 6, expected later this year. The debris in question is part of a spent satellite motor. News of the close approach came too late for flight controllers to coordinate an avoidance maneuver. The family of a pilot killed in a February 2008 landing accident has sued Avadyn, claiming a primary flight display was defective and dangerous, despite an NTSB ruling that pilot error caused the fatal accident. The Oregonian reports the $10.5 million wrongful death and negligence suit was filed on behalf of the widow and three children of Dr. Richard Otoski. The suit claims problems with the Lancair Columbia 400's autopilot and attitude heading reference system were causal to the aircraft crashing while Otoski attempted to make an ILS approach in hard IFR at PDX. Otoski was making his second approach to 10 right in heavy fog when he deviated from the approach path in an apparent attempt to go missed and clipped a tree. The observed runway visual range was below IFR minimums at the time. Also named in the lawsuit is the former Lancair certified aircraft, which became Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing, later taken over by Cessna. Up next on ANN, airline passenger traffic continues to drop. Airline stocks outperform the market for now. And Lindbergh Field gets a 20-year makeover. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for March 13th. I'm Paul Plack. It looks like continued shrinkage in airline passenger traffic volume is continuing into 2009. The U.S. Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Statistics reported yesterday that the number of domestic and international passengers on scheduled U.S. airlines in December dropped 5.7% from a year earlier. It was the 10th consecutive monthly decline from the previous year. For the full year of 2008, total passengers on U.S. airlines declined by 3.7% from 2007 to a total of 741.4 million. That's 28.2 million fewer than a year earlier. That was the first year-to-year decline since 2002 and the fewest passengers since 2005. Southwest Airlines carried more total passengers in 2008 than any other U.S. airline for the second consecutive year. American Airlines was tops in international passengers for the 19th year in a row. Stock analysts, who for years have been turning up their noses at the airlines, are now forced to acknowledge that in a time when blue chips are tanking, airlines don't look so bad. Having come through a decade-long gauntlet of the 9/11 attacks, the SARS and bird flu scares, bankruptcies, mergers, and last year's crippling oil price spike, U.S. domestic airlines are widely projected to have a profitable year in 2009. They even look good against foreign competitors, as the U.S. dollar's recent strength has had the effect of lowering fuel costs for U.S. carriers. But Reuters reports influential analysts still aren't giving the industry much respect. Of the capacity cuts which enabled the airlines to do well this year, independent analyst Michael Boyd suggests that what looks like successful strategy was dumb luck, with capacity cuts planned to battle oil prices happening to come just in time to match falling demand. Quote, "That was only serendipity. They didn't see the demand drop any more than anybody else," unquote. Morningstar analyst Basili Aloukas predicts that as demand falls further, airline stocks will not continue outperforming the overall market. Quote, "The industry is so dynamic it could change on a dime," unquote. Independent airline consultant Robert Mann is especially cynical about the current airline stock prices. Quote, "It may never occur again. Enjoy it while it lasts," unquote. San Diego City Council has approved an extensive makeover for San Diego International Airport, a.k.a. Lindbergh Field. The San Diego Union-Tribune reports councilors voted Monday to approve a plan submitted by a panel of local officials led by San Diego Mayor Jerry Sanders. The plan includes a new passenger terminal closer to I-5, parking garages, and a multimodal transit center connecting the airfield to the city center. An underground train would eventually ferry passengers across the field. Buses will fill in till the subway is ready. The expansion of the airport follows a failed attempt at Plan A, which was to add commercial facilities to Marine Corps Air Station Miramar. The voters and the Marine Corps both said no to that in 2006. The Lindbergh plan now goes to the Airport Authority for consideration. If it's approved, work is expected to take up to 20 years and cost between $5 and $11 billion. An FBO price war that lasted for years at Greater Rochester International Airport has ended, and with it, low rents and service costs, which made the airport in Western New York wildly popular among general aviation interests. The Rochester Democrat and Chronicle reports Landmark Aviation finally caved and was taken over by competitor U.S. Airports on January 1st. Rochester now has a single FBO, a situation it shares with 14 of the nation's 20 largest airports, according to U.S. Airports CEO Anthony Costello. The airport's lone flight school, Rochester Air Center, has complained to local authorities that U.S. Airports is trying to raise its rent from the $1,200 a month it was paying Landmark to $5,775 and accuses the company of exploiting its monopoly to gouge tenants. But Costello says that low rent, along with other below-market prices charged by Landmark, were merely a failed attempt by Landmark to drive out U.S. airports and create a monopoly of its own. He points out that Monroe County charges U.S. airports nearly $20,000 a year for the square footage which Rochester Air Center has been renting for an annual total of $14,400. That's a loss of more than $5,000 before considering insurance, utilities, maintenance, and snow removal. Quote, "We're not gouging anybody," unquote. The low prices are one reason the airport has seen 150,000 general aviation operations per year lately. That's more than Buffalo, Syracuse, and Albany combined. A mass exodus of GA may be imminent if prices rise suddenly. For now, the Monroe County Airport Authority is investigating the complaints, and Costello is delaying rent increases until June 1st. Isabel Morrison, business manager of the Rochester Air Center, tells the paper that the rent increase could force her to close. Quote, "If we have to leave, there won't be a flight school here for the first time in 60 years," unquote. Still ahead, the U.S. Air Force's first Chief Master Sergeant has gone west. The first stimulus aid to airports is announced. And the FAA grounds David Martz again. You're listening to AeroNews.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, the 13th of March, 2009. I'm Paul Plack. Aero News has learned former Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force, Paul Wesley Airey, died Wednesday in Panama City, Florida. Airey was the first person to hold the position. Current U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff General Norton Schwartz says Airey, quote, was an airman's airman and one of the true pioneers for our service. He was a warrior, an innovator, and a leader with vision well ahead of his time. His legacy lives today in the truly professional enlisted force we have serving our nation, and for that we owe him a debt of gratitude, unquote. Airey quit high school at age 18 to enlist shortly after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. He flew as a B-24 radio operator and additional duty aerial gunner. On his 28th mission, he and his crew were shot down over Vienna and held prisoner by the Germans from July of 44 to May of 45. While Chief Airey officially retired from the Air Force in 1970, he continued advocating for airmen's rights by serving on the boards of Air Force and enlisted professional military organizations throughout the years. On the north wall of the Air Force Memorial in Washington, D.C., his thoughts on airmen are immortalized. Quote, when I think of the enlisted force, I see dedication, determination, loyalty, and valor. Unquote. The Air Force Association honored Airey with its Lifetime Achievement Award in 2007. Chief Airey had turned 85 this past December. Greatest generation, indeed. Federal stimulus money is about to flow to airports. U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood announced yesterday that Pittsburgh International and Allegheny County airports will receive the first funding allocations for airport infrastructure projects under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. The FAA will allocate $10 million to Pittsburgh International to repair runway 1432. That's one of four commercial runways at the facility. The project includes grading, paving, marking signs, and lighting upgrades. Pittsburgh serves 4.8 million passengers per year. The $2 million allocation for Allegheny County's General Aviation Airport will renovate a taxiway and relocate a ramp. Both facilities are operated by the Allegheny County Airport Authority. LaHood commented, quote, this is a critical investment in our nation's airport infrastructure that will boost the local economy by providing jobs for Pittsburgh area residents, unquote. There's $1 billion total headed to airports, and by law, half of it must be awarded by June 17th. Well, it looks like Tommy Lee's going to have to find another pilot. The FAA issued an emergency revocation of David Keith Martz's commercial helicopter certificate this week. Martz drew the attention of the agency last month when a video hit the internet showing him operating a helicopter over Southern California while engaged in a sexual tryst with porn star Puma Swede. The video was made in 2007, but only came to light on Hollywood gossip site TMZ.com after another helicopter flown by Martz was forced to land at Van Nuys February 1st after allegedly flying too close to a Los Angeles Police Department helicopter. FAA spokesman Ian Greger told the San Diego Union-Tribune, quote, these actions showed a careless and reckless disregard for safety and showed that he lacks the care, judgment, and responsibility to hold a commercial pilot certificate, unquote. Martz has run afoul of the FAA before. In 1986, his license was revoked for flying with a forged medical. In 2002, he got a 30-day suspension for doing aerobatics below 1,500 feet over a populated area. In 2003, Martz again lost his ticket, this time for landing too close to personnel on the ground at Marine Air Corps Station Miramar. The FAA suspended him for 230 days in 2005 for flying passengers in a helicopter he knew was damaged. Martz is appealing the latest revocation. An administrative hearing is expected within the next 30 days. And finally today, a 21-year-old Yale University student is suing Southwest Airlines for $1 million. after he claims his Xbox 360 was stolen from his checked bag on a flight from New Haven, Connecticut to Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport. Jesse Myman, a resident of the Cincinnati suburb of Madera, Ohio, when he's not in school, says he claimed his bag at the end of the flight only to discover it was suspiciously light. He says when he opened it and found the Xbox and its components missing, he reported it to the airline immediately, but got what he called an unconscionable runaround from five separate Southwest employees. The Cincinnati Inquirer reports he filed suit Monday in Hamilton County Common Pleas Court, seeking $1,700 for the equipment and compensation for his non-economic distress of at least $25,000 or, quote, in the maximum amount allowable by law, or, in the alternative, in the sum of $1 million, unquote. Valerie Wonder of Southwest Airlines said the airline was unaware of the suit, but calmly pointed out there's a federal liability limit of $3,300 for the contents of checked bags. Quote, further, our publicly available baggage policies specifically exclude liability for electronics checked in luggage, unquote. You know, I gotta be honest here. I'm no big fan of fine print, but I'm leaning toward rooting for Southwest in this one. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, Doug Smith of the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators addresses questions about how the new organization will be different from NAFI. And if you're still using Stone Age manual downloads, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Have a clear and unlimited day.